I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today, On Deadline is giving you an election check-in, less than 3 weeks away from the big day. As of the time of this recording, Vice President Kamala Harris is continuing to track about 3 points ahead of former President Donald Trump in most national polls. Those same polls find that the main issues Americans will be weighing as they head to the voting booth are the economy, democracy, immigration, and healthcare. Oh, and the economy again, because most political experts will tell you that outweighs all the other issues. While Americans decide who gets their vote for the White House, there are several key Senate and House races that could also have major implications on who really has control in Washington come January. As things sit right now, Republicans hold control of the House of Representatives with 220 seats to the Democrats' 212. 3 seats left vacant will also be filled by January. In the Senate, Democrats have 47 seats to Republicans' 49. But four independent senators caucus with the Democrats, giving them a slim majority. Now both parties are not only hoping to take control of the White House, but they're also looking to take control of Congress. During the 2022 midterms, experts predicted that a red wave was coming. They insisted that Republicans would gain control of the Senate and the House. However, Republicans only barely gained the upper hand in the House. They failed to make any major moves in the Senate. The red wave wasn't anything more than a splash. But after increased economic hardships here at home for the past 2 years and expanding foreign wars, Republicans seem poised once again to take control of Congress. Charles Stewart, a professor and expert of congressional politics and elections at MIT, recently shared what he thinks will happen on November 5th.
So in which states are the Democrats most vulnerable and most at risk of losing seats?
It depends on the chamber, but for the Senate, where there's most attention right now, it looks like the test room, Montana, is very vulnerable. And, of course, the Manchin seat in West Virginia will for sure go over to the Republicans. The question right now is whether the Democrats will hold on to Ohio. Right now, it looks like Sherrod Brown is doing well there. And so you put all this together, it's looking like the Democrats, at the best they can hope for right now is another tie with the winner of the presidency or only being down by one seat in the Senate, and then hoping that Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski is a buffer between kind of the mainstream Republicans and the Democratic Party.
So a 50-50 split would once again mean the vice president has actual things to do.
Yes, actually, the vice president can't go far from the chamber. On the House side, it's looking. I mean, that's much more many more members, a lot more moving parts. It's looking right now that the Democrats have a good chance to, eke out a majority to replace the majority in the House, to replace the, tight majority that the Republicans certainly hold in the House. And so, I think the Democrats will be more cohesive should they take hold of the House. But nonetheless, it's going to be close and tight for regular legislating, regardless of what the composition of either chamber is going to be.
So if the Republicans do take control of the Senate, what do you think is the message that got through to voters?
Well, it depends on, kind of how they take control of the Senate. If it's the scenario that I just laid out, which is that, Democrats hold on to Ohio and Arizona, the message that got through to voters in most states is that if you're a Democrat or Republican, you stand by your party. But in, you know, there's enough ticket splitting in some of these states, like Ohio and Arizona, that the MAGA Brown brand is toxic. On the other hand, should the Democrats take Ohio and Arizona, then, you know, I think the, you know, the fringes of the Republican Party will be feel vindicated. And it would mean that in those states in particular, the social, I would say kind of the social agenda of the Republican Party will have motivated enough Republican voters to go over the top, which will embolden socially conservative Republicans in Congress to try to legislate on those issues.
But abortion was supposed to be a huge deal in this election. Has that come to pass?
Well, you know, we'll actually, this is a cop out maybe, but we'll see on election day. It's kind of flying under the radar. But, you know, we have Florida, for instance, where, you know, the Senate race there has really tightened. And, you know, it could be that what's motivating some voters is the salience of abortion that's been brought up because of the referendum that's on the ballot. I mean, I think it's, you know, abortion is an important issue, but it would be an even more mobilizing issue in states where it's on the ballot, and it's really on, you know, only on the ballot in a couple of battleground states. And so it doesn't look like it's going to be a huge mobilizing effect, unless that makes a difference in Florida. It might make it, I mean, it's likely to make a difference of a point or two in Arizona. So, you know, this is a game of inches with this election, and I think that anything might make a difference, but, you know, we'll only know once the exit polls come out and the results come in on election night.
So if it's really... it's the economy, stupid. How does that factor in? I mean, if you look from the top at the numbers, you know, we're doing great, but that hasn't trickled down to people at the bottom.
Well, it's two things. I mean, it's the economy stupid, which is making the, you know, making Donald Trump and Republicans running for the election this time, you know, kind of the presumptive people ahead. What's kind of interesting to a political scientist is that given the economy, you would expect that the Republicans really not have any question at all about winning a trifecta in Washington. And so why is it that they're not, you know, guaranteed for a trifecta? And I think that that's where the social issues come in. Yes, on the one hand, and here you have on the one hand, abortion pulling in Democrats' favors. Among Republicans, you have kind of issues around transgender rights and things like that that are motivating voters on the right. Net, it's looking like abortion, despite what I just said, abortion may be the social issue that's the stronger weight among kind of marginal voters. We're hearing a lot from kind of, you know, folks who flip-flop between Obama and Biden. You know, say that they're, you know, voting abortion this time around. And so I think on that net, that's where it's going to end up.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The party that wins control of Congress will carry serious weight, even in ways you may not expect. With the race for president remaining neck and neck, and other factors at play like former independent candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. remaining on the ballot in some states, the potential for a tie or both major candidates failing to reach the 270 Electoral College votes needed is a real possibility. We all know national political correspondent Steve Kornacki. He's the guy that's standing in front of a map with his sleeves rolled up on election night, spouting encyclopedic knowledge about elections. Recently, he broke down one possibility for a tie. In Kornacki's scenario, Trump and Harris would just need to win the swing states they're currently leading, with Trump winning the toss-up in Nevada and all of Nebraska's three votes. In that case, both candidates would have 269 Electoral College votes, just one under what they would need to win. There are also several other scenarios in which Electoral College votes are taken by RFK Jr. or some other candidate. If that happens and neither Trump nor Harris reach 270, the decision of who is president falls on Congress, according to the 12th Amendment. To share more on just how tight this race is, political analyst Steve Roberts joined Odyssey.
Steve, we're getting closer and closer every week we talk with you to Election Day. And another poll shows another basically dead heat.
It's true. I mean, I looked at the polls this morning, and if you look at all the averages, all the national averages, nationally Harris is ahead by about 2.5 points. But of the seven swing states, every one is within 1 percentage point, except for Arizona, where Trump's ahead by two. So it's a dead heat. And one of the issues that has got to be troubling to Democrats is the role of Hispanics, because Democrats have traditionally enjoyed huge margins among Hispanics. Obama won them by 44 points, Hillary by 38, Biden by 33. Today, Harris is running about 18, 19 points ahead among Hispanics. And the real problem are Hispanic men. And one of the reasons for that is that Hispanic men, particularly those younger men born in this country, are increasingly agreeing with Donald Trump on the issue of immigration. And it sounds counterintuitive, but it's a very important element in this very close election. About one third of Hispanics say they agree with Trump that undocumented immigrants should be deported. And that's one of the reasons why Trump has seized on this issue and is talking about it so incessantly in so many different places. Now, we have to say, in all candor, that a lot of what Trump says is not true. Immigrants do not commit crimes in greater numbers than native-born Americans. Immigrants do not take jobs away from native-born workers. In fact, the conservative Republican governor of Ohio pointed out that in Springfield, Ohio, where Trump has been demonizing Haitian immigrants, that these immigrants have contributed to economic renewal of the city and their source of economic activity and vitality. But Donald Trump has always used immigrants to demonized immigrants from the first days that he entered political life. Let's remember, his first big issue was to accuse Barack Obama, as he always called him, Barack Hussein Obama, of not really being American, of having been born in Kenya, which was not true. And throughout his career, Donald Trump has demonized immigrants. And throughout American history, figures like Donald Trump have arisen to demonize immigrants. And he's very much in an American tradition.
On that issue, you mentioned Hispanic men. And I want to kind of focus in on one part of that, and that's men, because whether you're Hispanic or anything else, it seems that the gender divide is really, Steve, the biggest divide when looking at every single poll that's come out in the last few months.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we talk a lot, the focus on the gender gap, rightly so, has been often on women and how Democrats have polled especially well among women, and that this, one of the biggest differences between Hillary losing and Biden winning is Biden actually polled 3% better among women than Hillary did. But there's always two sides to the gender gap. And increasingly, people are focusing on the fact that while Democrats are doing very well among women, in part because the abortion issue has become so prominent, there is a reverse factor here, and that is Trump is doing better among men than he has in the past, and particularly not just among Hispanic men, but among black men as well. That's why last week Barack Obama went out of his way in a campaign stop to speak directly to black men, and he even pretty clearly accused them of being sexist, and that they were uncomfortable with the idea of a black woman as president. And he said people are making all sorts of excuses, but he was pretty clear in saying that black men, that part of the reason why Trump is doing better among black men than Democrats have in the past was because these black men were uneasy with the idea of a black woman running the country. So you're absolutely right that one of the reasons why this election is so close is because Trump is performing better among men in general, but particularly among Hispanic and black men. If you look at the latest New York Times poll among Hispanics, to take an example to reinforce your good point, Harris is winning by 31 points among Hispanic women, but by only 3 points among Hispanic men.
Trump has been hitting the campaign trail hard to rally his voters and to appeal to moderates. On the other hand, Vice President Harris is calling on her Democratic predecessors to help her campaign. Last week, former President Barack Obama made an appearance at a campaign event for Harris in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now the former president is also making appearances in other swing states to stump for Harris. To share more on Obama's efforts for the current Democratic candidate, KCBS political analyst Mark Sandalow joined his station in the Bay Area.
What did you think of former President Obama's tone?
Well, this is, let's start with something you raised where he talked to, specifically reached out to African-American men. He, before this big speech he gave, he made an unannounced stop at a field office, a Harris for President field office, and addressing black men in particular, he delivered a message that he is uniquely able to give, which is, I mean, the polls suggest that although 3 out of 4 black men still say they favor Kamala Harris, 1 in 4 say they plan to vote for Donald Trump. And that's a lot. And in a swing state like Pennsylvania, that can make the difference. And what Trump said to them quite bluntly, I mean, he said that perhaps there is part of you that simply doesn't think a woman is capable of being president. And he goes, I don't understand that. He said, and then this goes back to the themes he's been talking about before, you know, this is a guy, Donald Trump, who has never shown any signs of caring for anybody besides himself, let alone people like you who have worked your way up and fought, you know, barriers in life, and it's unthinkable that you're not going to vote and you're not going to get out there and vote for Kamala Harris. It is critical that somebody, and Obama again is uniquely able to do this, you know, reach out to, you know, to non-white voters. This is something that always stuns people when I tell them this. The last Democrat to win a majority of the white vote, it wasn't Barack Obama, it wasn't Bill Clinton. The last Democrat to do that was Lyndon Johnson in 1964. If only white people vote, and don't forget, for a big segment of this country's history, they're the only ones who were allowed to vote. It was only white men. White voters have voted Republican in every single election, you know, for the last 60 years. So it is critical that they get some turnout, and that's precisely what Obama's trying to do.
Yeah, that voter apathy thing that we always fear, you figure this year, especially, you wouldn't see that.
So this was his, you know, he must have said a dozen times in the speech in Philadelphia yesterday, I'm sorry, it's in Pittsburgh, when, you know, he completely thrashed Donald Trump. I mean, he talked about how, you know, there's a 78-year-old billionaire who's not stopped whining about his own problems since he went down the golden escalator. He laughed at the idea of Trump ever having changed a tire or a diaper. He said, you know, if he didn't care about the fact that his own vice president was about to be hung in his response was, so what? Do you really think he cares about you? The big tone of this, repeatedly when he mentioned Donald Trump, people started booing. And over again, Obama says what he said before, don't boo, vote. They can't hear your boos, he kept telling them, but they certainly will hear your vote. And the idea of these rallies, because it's certainly not as if somebody's going to watch the Obama speech and say, wow, I was thinking of voting for Donald Trump, maybe I'll vote for Kamala Harris now. The whole idea behind this is to rally the base, to make sure that there is big turnout. The polls in Pennsylvania right now with its 19 electoral votes are as close as anything we've ever seen before. So that, you know, what happened in Florida in 2000, the decided election by, you know, less than 1,000 votes could certainly happen again in Pennsylvania. So every bit counts. And Harris is hoping that Obama, with his oratorical skills, can do the same thing in Michigan and Wisconsin.
So all of that brings us to this. An America divided staunchly along party lines, and so equally that it's almost impossible to predict whether Donald Trump or Kamala Harris is going to become the next president. It might be easy to think of this as a horse race, with winners and losers and voters screaming at the home stretch for their pick. But in reality, this isn't a day at the races, and we don't just have beer money riding on the outcome. Reproductive rights, climate change, our tax system, international relationships, healthcare, social security, immigration, even whether this American experiment in democracy continues for another 200 years, yeah, that's all on the line. We'd never tell you where you should stand on these issues, but we will tell you that it is your responsibility as a citizen in a democracy to stand somewhere. And that somewhere is at the polls, on or before Tuesday, November 5th, 2024, depending on your state system. We'll see you there. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser-told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.